Well, it was in 1989 that Jerry Jones bought the Cowboys. And that year, he and his wife Jean came from Little Rock, Arkansas to Dallas. Well, my late husband and I had been in Dallas about a year, and Jean and I met. We became good friends. And at that time, we each had three children, unmarried. Today, all of our children are married, and Jean and Jerry have 9 grandchildren. So it's a big bunch. Their children are Stephen, Charlotte, and Jerry Jr., and they all are executives in the Cowboys organization. And let me tell you, their family is so very involved in all these philanthropic endeavors in Dallas, in the city, in the state, and nationally with the Salvation Army. They do such a marvelous job. From the moment that Jerry Jones bought the Cowboys, he has brought such energy and excitement and vision to the city. They had 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, 93, 94, and 96. A vision that Jerry and his family had was they wanted to have a stadium that housed 80,000 seats. They wanted that kind of capacity. And so it was besides having it just for sports events, they wanted to use it for other events. So in 2009, the Cowboys Stadium was opened, but today it is called the AT&T Stadium. There's something very special about this stadium because Jean and her daughter worked tirelessly getting wonderful art to be put all around this on the stadium walls and in little cubby holes. So if you are ever in Dallas, please take a tour of the stadium because it is well worth your time. Well, the man who is owner and president and general manager of the NFL's Dallas Cowboys and head of the Jones family is our friend and your speaker today, Gerald Wayne Jones.
Fantastic. Thank you. Well, good afternoon or good morning, and Kathy at... We got to sneak in here a little earlier yesterday and got to visit with you and Rodney and some special friends, and it felt so good to get to share your appreciation and love for this area. We do get to do that with our frequent time with Kathy, and so we come very appreciative of the jewel box that you have here in Naples. I'm particularly, though, proud to be standing here because in 1985, you're a part of the Forum Club that just does such great work in recognizing those future, not only entrepreneurs, but certainly future adults and people we're counting on in the country. My hat's off to you. I applaud. You can't do what we do without appreciating where it needs to be invested, and that's in young people, and need to be invested in the future. It's one of the ethos. It's one of the really fundamentals of sports, and certainly we have an appreciation for it in the NFL. I've got 20 minutes, and then we're going to basically take some questions. But I do want to thank Kathy for asking us to come. Rodney, really proud to get a chance to visit this group. This is easy for me because I've read, I know many of you recognize your names, know many of your careers, and know that you know that Santa Claus doesn't put the tricycle on the Christmas tree. So it's easy to recognize that. You also know that for every time you get to jump up and score that touchdown, or every time you get to say, I want it, you've probably got about three or four times that you've had to go home on that pillow and scream like nobody's business just because you didn't get there. This stuff isn't easy. Well, football is that. Many of you have played it, many of you as young men, and you've had your brothers and your daddies play it as women, and you know what sports and competition's all about. I dare say that I've had a chance to be involved in the game as a player. I got to play for the University of Arkansas Razorbacks. We won the national championship when I was a senior, and it was an experience that really has everything to do with me standing here with you today representing the Dallas Cowboys. But I do want you to know that out of all of that time, I got to play on a national championship team, got to be around some wonderful teammates, wonderful people, have gotten to be a part of the Dallas Cowboys now going on 25, 26 years. I think, Gene, we were 45, 46 when we bought the Cowboys at about that time. But gotten to do all of that. Without a doubt, though, the absolute greatest experience that we've ever had, and I've ever had in sports, was getting to coach my children and getting to go out there, those little league games, sit there in those meetings when I should have been paying more attention to what they were trying to present me or do, and I'd have my hand up and I'd be drawing up those plays that I was going to show those little kids when I got out there for the afternoon. Now, that is the thrill and the joy of involved sports. And I want you to know today, when we're sitting around talking, instead of my sons and one daughter sitting there talking about how it felt at the Super Bowl, how it felt over here, we sit there many times and are talking about some of the great experiences we had out there during that amateur sports in that amateur area. Now, having said that, I've got so much ground to cover. Ken Lewis is in here. Many of you know Ken, but Ken was the president of Bank America, as it would turn out, when we got to Dallas, and then later the chairman. Ken, it was so good to see you on this occasion, because you know that I know that when we first got to Dallas, what our challenges were at that time. Dallas looked like a nuclear bomb had gone off in it from a standpoint of economics. The buildings that were trying to be built were stopped in construction. The ones that were built were half. And frankly, if you went down to Ken's bank and wanted a loan, he might take your signature, but he damn sure didn't want any real estate along with it. He had all of that he wanted with it. That was the climate. When I bought the Dallas Cowboys, the Cowboys were losing $1 million cash a month. Every month that rolled, $1 million cash. That's from operation. The capital cost of buying the Dallas Cowboys of $155 or $165, whatever you want to count in that capital cost, at interest at that time was another $75,000 a day. So to get to coach the Cowboys, to get to be on the football field, to get to be a little part of the NFL, it cost $100,000 a day, whether you got up out of bed or not. And I didn't have any partners to get it done. Now, ladies and gentlemen, one of the stories of me standing here with you is a combination of business and marketing and football. It's a combination of that in the NFL. Well, I will tell you right now that when you strap that $100,000 a day on, you'll get real imaginative over how to market and how to get some revenue through that door. That'll make a genius out of you fast. And that's exactly what happened with the Dallas Cowboys and the NFL. Things like sponsors that were at one minimum level, then you had to take it to another level because I had to do what everybody in this room would have done. You had to sit down there and start creating some revenue, by the way, every minute while you were trying to cut back on some dollars going out the door. There is no joy in Mudville to sit here and be hitting that back pocket every time you score a touchdown. You need to be having the juice coming along with the touchdown. That's what makes a happy owner, and that's what makes a successful team in the NFL. Now, I got here, and Jean and I got here because of sports. She's not only our beautiful Miss Arkansas when we got married 51 years ago, but she was a state champion basketball player, scored 18 straight free throws in the championship game. She could hit a jumper from her shoulder, which was uncommon for a girls' basketball player. Short of it is, we love sports. When we got a chance to build this stadium that we have in Dallas today, the times and hours that we had spent looking at stadiums. And they should pass a law against letting anybody that's got enough credit or enough of everything to go build something like that stadium we built there, because they'll go nuts. And that's exactly what we did. We went nuts when we built that stadium. I would talk to people about building that stadium, about talking to cities about helping get involved in it at the time in the Dallas area. And they said, Jones, don't you think you could talk maybe you could cut it back a little bit. Maybe you could go back down on it a little bit. Isn't that a little too ambitious? And it probably was, but you certainly knew that you were going to have this time. That was going to be it. There wasn't going to be another stadium in the Jones's life at that time. And we wanted to show out for the Cowboys, and we wanted to show out for the country. The NFL, when I first bought the team, I was telling our friends last night, I gotten a feel for that you were going to have to get out and do a good job of selling tickets. And you were going to have to work some popcorn machines. And you were going to have to operate like that. But what about this thing called television? What was that going to do? This was as we were getting ready to buy the team operationally losing $1 million a month. I bought 13% of the Dallas Cowboys from the federal government. It had been foreclosed on, so I wrote a check to the federal government for the Dallas Cowboys at that time. The NFL's television rights fees had been flat for three straight negotiations, and it looked like the NBA was really going to be the one that might come on up at that time in 1980 and 89. So that there certainly was an opportunity to get involved, although this great negotiator salesman that's sitting here in front of you, and I wouldn't want you to see what I bought at the time when I bought it, but this great negotiator paid the most that has ever been paid for anything in sports at that time, paid that for that team. I did want it more than I should have. I was intoxicated with the idea of getting to stand on that sideline, of getting to get out there and get involved and be a part of being with the NFL. My master's thesis, when I was a senior, I was in business school, but then to be eligible my senior year, you had to stay eligible for being undergraduate, and so I took master's program. My master's thesis, was the role of oral communication in modern-day football. And so I did surveys. I just recently read back and visited, and had great interviews, and the time they took was unbelievable, from Bear Bryant, from Paul Dietzel, from some of the great coaches of that time, those names familiar at that time, and boy, did they really opened up. And that was where I got my data for my thesis. The common thing among them was salesmanship. The common thing among those great coaches of that time was selling. You're always selling yourself. You're always selling the school. You're always selling your team. You're always selling it. You're selling it whether you're in front of the team or you're selling it whether you're talking to alumni. You're always selling. So I didn't have to go very far when I decided to buy the Cowboys, and I saw that we were a little fading and a little soft off the field. I didn't have to go very far. I could just look over at that thesis and say, go sell something. Get out there and go sell. And that's exactly what we've done since being involved with the Cowboys. The NFL, for instance, this last year, is a great television content. I wish I could tell you that I saw that clearly 25 years ago when I bought it. I wish I could tell you that I could roll the clock forward to today and see what content means, not only on normal television, but certainly in terms of carrying it around, all the different mediums that we have today. I went to see a guy named Dan Burke. He was the chairman of ESPN and ABC Television. And I said, tell me about television. I had owned the NBC affiliate in Little Rock, Arkansas but I sold it to help me buy the Cowboys. And so I knew that much about it, but I hadn't gone to a lot of sales meetings when I was involved with it. I hadn't gone to a lot of content meetings. And I said, tell me, Mr. Burke, if you will, about the future of television and football and sport. And he said, well, first of all, we can't do without it on television. We can't do without it. Now, I'm not saying I know that we can't do, but he said, you can't do without it. He said, first of all, its best interest, the time that it has its apex of interest, is when we want to get the most decision makers in front of a television set or looking at a screen. It's called the fourth quarter, Thanksgiving, Christmas, during that period of time. He said at that time, we sell almost 70% of every dollar we get in on television, we sell it right there. And so your sport nails it. And he said, I really don't think there can be a dumb bunch of owners dumb enough to screw that up. He said, it is right there. It is right there for you. He said, secondly, those huddles. He said, when a game never stops, up and down, never stops, basketball, soccer, and I'm a great fan of all of it. He said, you don't get the natural break. The plays run, they go to the huddle, 30-second spot. Plays run, go to the huddle, 30-second spot. He said, it is an absolute natural for what we want. We no way we could sell a continual messages to fans if we didn't have those breaks and that stop. But most importantly, and it's probably the thing I want to spend the most time with you today, because we've got some other social issues that have evolved that I couldn't have seen coming in the NFL. But he said, more important than all of it put together, if I hired every producer in Hollywood, hired them all out there, 2,000 of them out there, there's no way that they could come up with the soap operas that go on around these teams, not only during the season, but out of the season. And he said, it is a new deal every day, and it's going on all over, and it creates more interest. Oh, yeah, sometimes it's smart. Remember Ali, he'd get up there, and boy, he'd be poetry, and he'd be everything, and then he'd go crazy. And you'd sit there and say, just shut up for a minute. Just shut up. Come on, don't go. Well, that can happen and does happen with the sports. But he was a prophet. What he was really talking about is reality TV, and what he was really talking about is as it pertained to the NFL that you know today. Now, that would have been hard to see then, but I will say this. I had the opportunity to talk to all the publishers at the Waldorf Astoria here many years back, and I had my remarks all set, and then that day in USA Today, and the guy that was introducing me was the publisher of the USA Today, and he basically was talking about the normal introduction that you might have under those circumstances. Well, I took the USA Today that day, and I had two players at that time, Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith of Florida. In USA Today, on about the third page over in the sports section, looked like a folded-out match deal that holds your matches in about that long, was Emmitt Smith getting his degree that he had promised his mother 8 years after he had been in the NFL. He was getting his degree, showed him there with his diploma, getting that diploma at that time. Right before that, a complete full page, using the entire page, was Michael acting up with a fur coat on going in the courthouse. Michael Irvin. And I said to all the publishers and everybody involved, now you've got these newspapers, and you've got it to where all it's about is human frailty on the front page. You've got it on the second page. You've got it on the fifth page. And you're about to take the one spot called the sports page, and you're about to start filling it up with all the foibles and all the frailties that go on. You better keep that one a little clean for people trying to accomplish, young people, and going for that rather than that kind of emphasis, rather than that emphasis right there. Well, I will say this. I have been surprised that sports, the interest in sports, that it has maintained that interest in spite of the fact that the jurisprudence section on the sports page, in spite of the fact that those issues that come up, it hasn't deterred the kind of interest that you might think. We all are business. We know that we don't want unsavory stories about anything to do near our products. We want that, and certainly the same thing is there with the NFL, which brings me to this. First of all, I would have never thought that the NFL would be a visible tool to talk about bullying. I would have never thought that the social problem of bullying. Well, we know it's there, and we've always known it's there in schools, and it's deplorable. But the NFL can have some of it in a dressing room, and actually does, and in this particular case I'm referring to a couple of years ago right here at Miami, did exist bullying. Between those big old boys, how can anybody bully each other? Well, it goes on, intimidation, that kind of thing. Same thing, it goes on out here in life. The NFL becomes a tool to get the message out that it's not tolerable. I would have never thought that because we have the visibility that we have, because we have the kind of interest we have, that we also are being said, look, let's step up here, guys. You're fortunate. You've got a lot of interest in this country. Get your responsibility hat on and start helping us with domestic violence. Get this hat on and start helping us with sexual assault. Get your hat on and start helping us about drunken driving. Get your hat on and start helping us about that. Because you got all the airtime. And we want to use it. And we say, my goodness, our players, we have right at 3,000 players probably active in the NFL. We had two last year go to jurisprudence over domestic violence. Two out of 3,000 players at that time. Now, these guys, I'm not making excuses for them, but they've got, they're young. They've got some money in their pocket. They like to get out, and they can brush. They can brush a little area that you are more vulnerable in. I'll say that, more vulnerable. But yet I will tell you, when it comes to their activities, it really does lay right down and often surpasses anything that we have in society. You're right. You're not society. You need to be a role model. You need to be an example. Work harder. Use it. Work hard. Well, I want to say this to you. We're doing that. We've got it. We've strapped that on. We want to do it, whether it be domestic violence. We want to do it, whether it be sexual assault. Now, Jerry, last week you signed Greg Hardy. He had a conviction overturned, but he had a conviction for domestic violence. What does that mean? What does that say at the time? Well, let me just say this. First of all, I've been coached to the fairly well, don't even open your mouth until you talk about how deplorable and how much you're against domestic violence. Before the Cowboys, for 12 years, I was chairman of Battered Women in Central Arkansas. And I got the Razorbacks to come down, play a game, and I matched all the money to build safe houses. And been in the safe houses. So a lot of people that would criticize you, you can ask them, have you ever been in a safe house? Have you ever built one of those at the time? So my point is, that's not the issue. Jerry, everybody's going to read about the Cowboys. Don't you understand? You got all that visibility out here. They're going to read about the Cowboys. And what kind of example is that you're making there? Well, the other side of the coin is one that's pretty simple. Sure, he's a privileged individual. Sure, he's in the stratosphere when it comes to dollars. But believe it or not, he has suffered so badly from where it could have been, because he didn't use his head, because he didn't do it right. He basically had an incident, and that incident has kept him from getting a guaranteed $70-80 million contract that he would have gotten last year. Now he gets it paid by the play. He's paid by the play out there. But that's relatively speaking, that's a high price. He's a fortunate young man, though, to get the opportunity to basically rehab, not only rehab for everybody that's involved on good, but rehab in front of the country if he's able to do that. The only way you know if you're making progress in that area, domestic violence, is if they don't do it again. That's when you know you've made it, right there. The rest of it is pretty much between no man's land there. Now, The point I want to make, and I'm getting ready to stop my remarks. I could talk to you all night long or all day long. Number one, the NFL and the Dallas Cowboys have gotten in and had an experience financially, have had an experience that I nor anyone could have ever dreamed over the last 25 years. Oh, I had it all figured way back 25 years ago. I knew that we were going to go into the greatest economic boom this country had ever seen. I had that all figured. I knew rates were going to go from 11 to 7. I had it all down. They're real good. Well, the point is, though, that I did see enough that I could basically make a decision and not completely get killed. And then everything else, you could work and look and work. We basically, it was pretty easy to see that with that kind of visibility, that kind of passion for your brand, with that kind of getting involved close to competition, close to sport, yet at the same time have that kind of attention, it was pretty easy to see that you could sell stuff with that. Everybody in this room knows one of the biggest challenges you've got when you have a product or a service is how do you let people know you got it and how do you basically get the message to them? Well, in the NFL, you had that, and you had that with the Dallas Cowboys. And candidly, that's where we've gained and in practice our reputation in marketing is because it's been obvious from the get-go that if you dress it up right and put the Dallas Cowboys with it, then you got a good chance to be able to sell it. I would say this. I had an upbringing and an education that was built around marketing. I certainly had the great, great privilege of getting to compete and play football. And they did come together on this cowboy thing. It did come together. It certainly has had its share of criticisms. It's had its share sometime when we don't win. Well, all Jones is interested in is making a buck. Hell, he's not interested in putting a winning football team on the field. And that just goes with the territory. On the other hand, I know no school, no family, no entity at all can be their very best unless they've got some financial stability. When they're shaky, when they're having to worry about that, they can't be the athlete, they can't be the business guy, they can't be what they could be if it were sound. I believe that. I try to push that throughout the NFL. I'm a big proponent and have been a big proponent of teams really, really building up their marketing, staff at the time. And it has not been easy from that standpoint, right? About 4 years into the NFL sued me for $300 million. Now, that I look back on that, and it just seems impossible that room full of guys could have gotten mad enough to turn around and sue me. What really is crazy is that I got mad right back and sued them for $700 million. We were visiting with Brian Roberts, the chairman of Comcast, and we'd had a tough negotiation. I'm the chairman of our broadcast of our network. And we just knew we had an easy go of it getting Comcast and, for that matter, Time Warner to put our NFL channel on their standard package for their cable. And we just thought that'd be a cup of cake. Well, we found out that was going to be about a 3 or 4 all-day sucker. I got personally sued. The NFL got sued. It was rough as a cob. I'd go into towns that in Texas, Oklahoma, or other parts of the country, and that Time Warner was in, and they wouldn't be showing the NFL channel. And I'd get on the news and point in the finger and say, if you're a Cowboy fan, switch from Time Warner to this other one. Right in the camera, you switch over. If you want to see Cowboy games, you better switch over to the thing. So it got rough as a cop. Well, anyway, we met at the pass, and we basically were together. We were on the same team. And he was wondering, he said, can we play that much hardball? Can we be that rough with each other? And I ever feel good and comfortable about coming in the room with everybody after all of that? And I said that my little story I just told you about having a Donnybrook very early on, and now I go in that room and got some of the best friends we ever have. We're just going on with the dance because we all recognize that it was just business, but certainly in the best interest of the NFL. One of the things that I can be guilty of is standing up here too long, period, but more importantly, not talking enough about this great game that we have. My daughter, and I appreciate Kathy, you mentioned it, Jean and I both do. Jean and Charlotte were so instrumental in the building of that stadium. My favorite line Jean had as she walked out to the contractors, and I don't know, is Rooney in here? He's right here. I know he's a member of the club, but his Manhattan Construction Company was the company that built our stadium. But the foreman that was there building it walked up to Jean and said, "Ms. Jones, you know what you're wanting to do here, where these concourses used to be, you're wanting to put these elaborate clubs." Said, "You know, we're building a football stadium, not the lobby of the Ritz Hotel." And Jean calmly looked over at him and said, "Well, that's where we need to get reconciled. It's going to be more like the lobby of the Ritz Hotel." And it's like the lobby of the Ritz Hotel. And we are proud of the art. One of the things that we have learned on the way to promoting a brand is to cross over in the constituencies. That stadium was built for television. Oh, yeah, we love to have that capacity there to watch Cowboy games. But that stadium could have been built for $400 million less just to watch Cowboy games. That stadium, the wow factor, the pizzazz, the things that are there, that's to get Al Michaels when he's sitting up there on that microphone. He's not talking to 80,000 people in the stands. He's talking to 30 million people. And he says, "You ought to see this thing." He said, "It is unbelievable." And he talks about it. Then he'll talk about the arc, and he'll talk about the architecture. You can't do that. You got to have real meat on the bone to get those guys to do it. Now, you can't fool with them. Well, that's where 50% of the cost of that stadium went, to get them to tell that story and vicariously have you picture it if you're watching it in Naples or wherever you're watching. That's the purpose of the wow factor in that stadium. Television has long since not only established the NFL, but it is going in the way of the future. But the NFL cannot become a studio game if it does not have the pageantry of Rome, if it doesn't have the big crowds, if it doesn't have those kinds of things. You'll see through that, and I'll see through that. What we want is we want that going on, but yet we want the millions of people that are watching the game. We want a game that's rough as a cob. We want it physical. We want it very physical. You'll see a time when our game is the most physical. College a little less so, high school much less so, that'll be the future right there. But when you want to see the men go, that's where it's going to be with the NFL at that time. By the way, it should be that way because they're making $15 million a year, so much a play to go out there and do that. And we all understand that and accept that. I'm excited about the future of what the NFL can be, not only regarding the game, but also how it's going to be viewed. We've all gotten used to the traditional way of television sets. Now then, we know the games are going to be watched so much this way, so much in your hand, and so many variations of that handheld. And we want to be ready for that in the NFL and tailor the packages that we put together to accommodate watching the games from those mediums that are there. I asked John Madden one time. I said, "John, is this thing as important?" I said, "Tell me, I'm just blown up, and I get too excited about football." He said, "No, Jerry," he said, "I think it's important." Well, I want you to hear me say, I don't believe the sun comes up and sets. Excuse me, I don't mean to get emotional here, but I don't believe the sun comes up and sets with football or the NFL. I don't believe that. But what I do believe the NFL can be is a great respite for the heroes that create these jobs, the heroes that get out here and medically save people, the heroes that get out here and teach and create the kind of young people that we've got that we can depend on. Now, that's where it is. That's the hero. But I like it that we can be a place that they can have a minute or two or an hour or two and get over here and be involved with the NFL. And it's in my view, it's many constituencies. I've started to tell you about the stadium. I love to see our stadium featured in architectural magazines. I love to see our stadium in art magazines. I love to see it in travel magazines. And I know that a huge percentage of people that are invested and interested in those areas. But when and if they do get interested and they've seen you in those forums and seen you in their area, then it's just as easy for them to have a little more interest in what the Cowboys are about. This room is full of a lot of NFL fans from a lot of different teams. And I love it. I told several, if I pouted every time somebody came up and was for another team, I'd be a pretty old grouchy guy. But that's just not the way it is, and not the way that I do feel about it. But it is great to have the ability to dream, ability to think on the edge about how to take advantage of some of the things that I've talked about here today. They should all start and do start, not with a dollar sign, but they start with just how could it be better? How could it be an experience? I'm going to close with talking about the big center-hung screen that we have in our stadium. Gene and I were in Las Vegas, and we watched Celine Dion in a theater there do her performance with about a 30-by-30 screen behind her. And she would sing and do her act. And I really didn't know when it was over had I watched her or had I watched the screen. Were I living through my periphery? Was I directly looking at her? All I knew when I walked out of that thing, I'd had a heck of an experience. It was unbelievable. It was different. There's no question. And I looked over at Gene. I said, we can watch football games like that. That's the way we ought to watch football games. And that guy at the top of that stadium, the guy up there at the top, he can watch that stadium better than the guy sitting down there on the 15-yard line sitting 20 yards in the field. He can do that. And those were the kinds of thoughts that came up. Now, how to pay for it, what to do with it commercially or what have you, that was an afterthought. It basically came about by the idea of how to make it work. In short, I wish I could tell you that the NFL was probably a little less exciting than it was 25, 26 years ago. It's not. It is not. It the opportunity to use it and use it for many right things, such as the social issues we're talking about, gives us that opportunity to do that. Y'all are wonderful. It's great to be here. Kathy, Rodney, thank you for having me here.
Jerry, that was fabulous. Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it. I thought your comments were very insightful. This is a book on Naples and a book on Marco Weiland. And I think we should have a professional team here, don't you? Thank you very much.
Where are we going to build a stadium? And I'll help sell seat license to pay for it.
Okay, I'll take lead this.
Thank you. Thank you. Rodney, did I leave us any time?
Just a few minutes.
Yes. And from my standpoint, don't hesitate to step out. I know we're carrying this thing long.
Clearly, we have a lot of questions. We can't get through them all. They do revolve around a number of themes. But Jerry, to start off with, what has been or was your toughest decision as an owner, and has that decision aged well?
Well, buying the team was tough for the economics. The stadium should have been tough, but wasn't. We wanted to do it, and we're really ready to. I had said after buying the Cowboys, and Ken, you remember, I bet you do remember some of the financial aspect of it, Ken Lewis. I'd said I danced with the devil, and I knew I had. And if I ever live to tell about this, I'll never go near it again because there'll be nothing that would ever cause me to do it. Here, 22 years later, we go out and we've got 2,000 people 50 feet deep in the ground building a $1.2 billion project and the worst economic time that anybody on this earth has ever seen hits. And I thought, oh, hell, I have turned around here 25 years later and jumped right back in the soup. And so here we go. So the last several years since we built that stadium, process of building it, have been the hardest working time and the most challenging time and the most nervous time. I'll tell you, when that cricket hits, it's up for the day until we get that thing digested.
Okay, thank you. Understanding that coaching your children is one of the life's greatest moments, with what is known about football's concussion today, would you now still coach them on the football field or pick another sport?
I certainly would have them play football. I have grandchildren. They do play football. You say, well, Jerry, what else could you say? No, we can take the head out of the game. Our generation, many people in this room that played it, we were taught to lead with our head. You always led with your head. As a matter of fact, I was taught that your neck is your strongest muscle. And so don't put your head down, face up. That muscle will take care of the impact for you and lead with your head. We don't need to lead with the head. We don't have to lead with the head. And so it's about technique. It's about teaching. You, though, cannot replicate the experience. You can use good judgment, but you can't replicate the experience of a youngster that has the opportunity to experience knowing how much they're being depended on by their teammates, knowing how much they're depending on their teammates, and doing that in tired and stress, and doing that in competition. You can't do that in a book. You can't do that in a gym. There's not but one place to get that done. And you don't want to go there. It's too high a price, and it's called the battlefield. And so you see some of the greatest lessons that have ever been learned by people that have learned them. We've got to keep that there. I'm paraphrasing. That's Jerry Jones saying that, but Teddy Roosevelt had that to say in some other form or fashion many, many years ago. So we've got to keep the game there. It's not necessary for kids to play tackle football at 7 or 8 or 9. It's not necessary that they do that. I think I played tackle football when I was in the 7th grade for the first time.
Okay, there's a number on this subject. This one comes from a Viking fan. Will you take Adrian Peterson were he to become available?
First of all, I really can't respond. We have tampering, and it is a serious thing, and this one's a hot potato because a lot of people think that we've cleared a lot of cap room here yesterday so that if that opportunity should come along, we'd be ready to roll. That means kind of getting your stash together so you can act if you need to. So we can't go there. We lost our top running back to free agency, so you've got that spot open. We really do have, and you should have, a lot of guys that players that can get in there and do a good job. We've got a great offensive line, and so it creates a real opportunity for a running back. And so I'm not going to answer that. We had Tony Casillas. When Barry Switzer came to coach the Cowboys, Tony Casillas had won the Outland Trophy playing for Barry at Oklahoma. And Casillas was a Cowboy, and Barry was the new coach. Casillas comes in to pick his Super Bowl ring up. He hadn't been there for the ceremony. Runs into Barry in the hall, walking down the hall. This is not an exaggeration or a plea. And Barry said, "Boy, Tony, here you are on your way out. And I'm coming in. Wouldn't it have been great to get to coach you and renew our old coach-teammate thing?" Casillas became available in free agency in the commissioner rule. Everybody has a chance at him but the Cowboys. They tampered. That's with him walking down the hall saying, "I wish you had had a chance to be here." So it's really sensitive when it becomes sensitive.
If you didn't have Tony Romo and if you had number one choice, would you take Winston or Mariota or neither? Why?
Manziel.
Last year
we had quite a debate in the draft room over Johnny Manziel, and we ended up not drafting Johnny. Any Cowboy fan would know that. The player we ended up drafting, which was the next highest player we had on the board, is an absolute phenomenal player from Notre Dame. And could easily be one of the two best three or four players there are. Made all pro, not Pro Bowl, all pro as a rookie. And so so much for that. I think it was my son kicking my leg that made that decision for him.
This is from a student, so it's particularly interesting. What was your inspiration to keep moving forward?
Oh, I think fear. We know that I have financially early
I was always concerned. And my dad said, son, you're not an attorney, you're not a doctor, you don't have or an engineer. And that if you mess up, your next step is back with that briefcase knocking on those doors. Now, I've sat in a lot of waiting rooms, knocked on a lot of doors, had my knee pads on a lot, trying to talk to people about buying something. I will tell you, when I bought the Cowboys, it got a lot easier to get in that door with it on the basis. But I've got to say this time, but they're really selling, as I mentioned, coaches that were talking about selling. But there are five things that make a great salesman. Five. And selling yourself is very important. Number one, ask for the money. I forgot the other four.
Another good question from a student is, what do you think needs to change when it comes to financial planning for players?
It's if there's any way that you could get in your labor agreement. We operate with a collective bargained agreement. And if there's any way they could agree, the players, to defer a huge portion of what they make for many years, defer it, then it would be in their best interest and everyone's best interest. Only a small percent of players end up with any money when they're through. And so I asked Bob Arum one time, the great boxing promoter, how many of the fighters that he managed. And he had Ali, he had Sugar Ray Leonard, said, how many really ended up with any money? And he said, not one. Not one. And so it really, and the facts are that when you get a chance to play in the NFL, if you would take what you want to take for your mother in most cases and for your immediate family, and if you pay taxes and put the rest back on interest, you would have all the money for everybody that you love or going to love for the rest of your life if you just do that. And unfortunately, it doesn't work that much.
This is a thank you for coming, Jerry, but why no Cowgirls?
Well, Rodney, you know, you kept sending me those notes. Sending me those notes. Is the plane big enough to bring the cheerleaders on? But he asked why no cheerleaders. Yeah.
There's one partisan question here. It says, wouldn't you rather own the Green Bay Packers?
Well, of course, you know, everybody that is really familiar with the NFL know the Packers don't really have an owner. They're owned by a lot of people. Actually, they do. If the Packers were ever sold, it would go to it's not the Foreign Legion. I'm not the Foreign Legion, but the American Legion. They're in Green Bay. So they don't really have an owner, but that's not the point of that question. And I'm going to say this. I can't tell you how partial I am to these Dallas Cowboys, but we envy, and the NFL is proud of that Green Bay Packer contribution to what football is all about.
Okay. One of your immediate competitors, should the Washington Redskins change its name?
You know, Dan Snyder is a friend, a good friend, and I know his heart is right, and he has made the proclamation, and it's I believe him that they use it to honor the Indian, and I think that is the case, and so I'm in Dan's corner.
Okay, last one. Well, this is the last question. Are NFL salaries out of control, and whose fault is it if they are?
Well, there's no question whose fault it is, and you're looking at it right here as certainly one of them. And the one of the reasons that we have a cap in the NFL is to keep the owners from killing themselves, so to speak. Seriously. And other sports don't have it, and you see where you go. Our cap has really been very effective. It creates really enormous opportunities for the players. and it really gives everybody a chance to win the Super Bowl and those players to be part of that and paid accordingly. I'm a big cap believer. On the other hand, I've always said, if anybody wants to open this thing up, we're ready to open it up with you, the Cowboys. But I like our game. I like the economics of the game the way it is right now relative to competition. And I think its popularity and the interest in it speaks for itself there. Well, let me close. I'll just close real quick. I started off by telling you not only how comfortable I am visiting with you and about things that so often I don't talk about, which is a little more business and maybe a little less football at the time. But I did that, so I enjoyed this. I hope as much as you enjoyed it. The facts are that, I'm closing with this, the facts are that the NFL is not like a normal business. You've got to honor their tradition. Tradition's a big thing in the NFL. Anytime I've stepped out of bounds on tradition, I've gotten a flag. It is a business, but it's not a bottom line Exxon business. It's not about the bottom line. The bottom line's important. It's got to be viable, but it's not about that. It's about entertainment, but it can't be wrestling. There's nothing faking this stuff. It's got to be the real deal, and it's got to really hurt when people get hit out there. That's a part. It's got to be real. It can't be entertainment. And then it's got to be competitive. It's got to be competitive. Those four things. Now, balancing all of that in terms of running a football team is the challenge that you have. And I usually stay out of bounds on maybe 50% of those four things most of the time. And that's why you get your name in the paper a lot of times in a critical way. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I'm proud of every NFL fan we got in this room. And y'all honor me for having me here. Thank you.